You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Great Plains Archaeology Podcast. Join me as we uncover the rich histories of North America's Great Plains, exploring the latest archaeological discoveries and past cultures that shaped this storied region. Welcome to the podcast. Welcome to episode 43 of the Great Plains Archaeology Podcast. We're excited to have you join us as we explore the rich and fascinating histories of North America's Great Plains. I'm your host, Professor Carlton Schildchief-Gover, and today I am joined by Dr. Phyllis Johnson and Erica Carmody. Thank you guys so much for being on the podcast. So real quick introductions. Dr. Johnson received their BA from Wright State University, MA from University of Tennessee, and PhD from Vanderbilt, has over 20 years of archaeological experience in the Midwest, Southeast, and Great Plains, and has also conducted fieldwork in Guatemala. Her primary research interests include cultural resources management, CRM, household archaeology, lithic analysis, gender computational methods, and equity issues in archaeological research. She is currently an assistant professor of anthropology at Michigan State University. And Erica, huge congratulations to Erica, recently graduated with her BA in Anthropology and History from Augustana University in Sioux Falls. Erica has participated in two field schools in Nebraska, and one in Nebraska and then one in Minnesota, and has worked as a paid intern for the Augustana Archaeological Laboratory and on a grant-funded project in the History Department, also at Augustana. And she will shortly be starting an internship at Cane River Creole this summer. How are you guys doing tonight? Erica, how are you feeling? Happy to be done with your degree?
Yes, it was really nice, but I'm happy to be done.
Excellent. That's a huge accomplishment. And how are you doing this evening, Dr. Johnson?
I'm doing really well. Yeah, I finished up my semester, so I'm just getting into summer research. So I'm excited about that.
Excellent. And so tonight we are talking about y'all's recent publication in Plains Anthropologist, continuing our series on highlighting recent scholarship in the quarterly journal from the Plains Anthropological Society. And your all's article, I was really excited to see it when it came out. I saw it on a Facebook post, but it is titled Patriarchy Persists, Gender Inequities in Plains Anthropologist Publishing from 1954 to 2023. So just starting off, what got you all inspired to pursue this question? Like, was it a trend that you were just seeing when you got the journal and you're like, wait a minute, there's a lot going on here? Or what was the inspiration?
So I started as the director of the archaeology lab at Augustana in 2023. And at that time, I was brand new to Plains archaeology. And so I was starting to go through the literature and trying to familiarize myself with, the landscape of Plains archaeology. And I just started to notice over the first, 6 months or so of that position that most of the literature we were citing in our CRM reports for the lab had been written by men. And a lot of the big, the books and bigger pieces that were cited quite often that we would look to were written by men. Certainly not all, but that seemed to be a very large trend in a way that I hadn't seen in other areas of the United States that I'd worked in, or in even Mesoamerica. And so I started to ask some of my colleagues at the lab and other people I had met in the Plains if they had also seen a similar trend. And then some of them started to point out that actually they thought this was even a wider problem in Plains archaeology and anthropology, that this issue of gender representation goes even beyond publishing. And so I reached out to Bill Billick, who was the editor of Plains at the time in 2023, and just asked if this was something that would be of interest to the journal. And he seemed really excited about it and really encouraged us to explore it further. And so we started to dive into the data a little bit.
That's great that Bill's supportive. I love Bill Billick. He's fantastic Plains archaeologist and individual in general. And so thinking a little bit broadly, why is Plains Anthropologist in particular an important journal to study?
So I think the Plains Anthropology, and I think Erica would agree with this, just the temporal depth that the journal has compared to some of the other, especially regional journals, I think makes it a really interesting study. The only other journal that has been looked at in terms of gendered publishing rates that has even close to the same amount of depth is the Journal of Great Basin and California Archaeology. And that journal had a depth of 46 years. Versus, I think, 69 years that we look at in the Plains. So my hope when we started this project was to be able to really do a longitudinal study of how hopefully, you know, women publishing in the journal had improved over time.
Absolutely. And so, Eric, it's my understanding that much of your contribution was the data gathering and collection. And so how did you go about collecting all this authorship information?
Well, the main way that I helped gather the data was looking through each of the journal articles, looking at what authors were primary authors and which were secondary or tertiary or even past that, and seeing whether we could find out whether it was a female author or male author, which at times is a little difficult, especially going back into the past because pronouns weren't used and it was harder to find information on the older authors because the internet was not as much of a thing.
Absolutely. So when you couldn't identify readily the gender of the author, what was that process like? Was it calling some of the more senior and established folks in Plains anthropology, like, hey, do you remember this person? You know, just walk us through, what was it like?
One of the first things, if we didn't recognize a name, is we'd try to look them up either on LinkedIn or some of the older profiles just to see if any academic profile came up. And if that didn't work, I would go to Phyllis and see if she knew who it was in the system, because some of the times, especially in the more recent ones, it's to people that you'd actually see at conferences or you know about or read books or journals on, so you knew the name. If that didn't work, then it did a little more deep dive.
Excellent. And so what other challenges or limitations did you guys run into while conducting this type of longitudinal study over an established and well-published regional journal?
Yeah, I would say that the biggest challenge was just accumulating all of the data. When I first reached out to Bill, he said that they didn't have a database of all of the journal articles. And so Eric and I had to go through and basically create our own spreadsheet by hand. And we looked at almost 1,400 entries. And so this took several months of me doing it kind of in my, you know, not spare time, but when I wasn't busy doing other things for the lab. And then Erica jumped on as an intern, but she also had other responsibilities when she was an intern at the lab. So it took, I would say, probably a total of 6 to 8 months to just get all of the data into the spreadsheet so we could actually start to analyze it.
Spreadsheets, gotta love them.
Yes.
That, I mean, that's, I was expecting like, and I don't know why, maybe like 3 or 4 months, but like now, like thinking about it with how long that, you know, that time depth is, and was there any issue like getting access to some journals that, you know, before the internet came out or your university library didn't have?
Plains luckily has everything posted online for free, so we were able to access everything. There were a couple of journals that were missing that weren't on the website. And so luckily at the lab, we had also all of the physical copies. So I was able to just go through the actual physical journal for those missing issues and collect those. But otherwise, they had everything posted online. So getting to the data wasn't the challenge. It was just getting it into a format that could be easily analyzed.
Gotcha. And so culminating in all this, like, what is it you guys found out with all that data? What was the difference in publishing between men and women in Plains anthropologists?
The difference was quite staggering. So overall, if you look at the entire time range and just compare women to men, women published at a rate of 17% versus men publishing as first or single author at a rate of 82%, which is at that time was a bigger disparity than I had seen in other journals that I had looked at. And when we did go to compare this to other journals, it was one of the lowest rates that any journal that has been looked at in this way has produced.
And were you able to isolate like certain decades or time periods where that rate was even exacerbated? There was even more men that were publishing as either first author or single author than women?
Certainly. It was certainly worse when the journal first started publishing. But what really surprised us, I would say, is that we didn't see, you know, that temporal positive change that you typically see with other journals where, you know, the rate in the beginning of Plains Anthropologists when they first started publishing in the 50s was fairly similar to what we see now. So For example, in the first decade of publishing, the rate of women publishing to men was something like 15%. And between 20 and 23, it has gotten significantly better. I think we're at about 31% just in the last few years. But if you look at the decade before, so 2010 to 2020, roughly, it was only a rate of about 20%. So you don't see a statistical difference in, you know, the very first decades versus the very last decades prior to 2020.
And then especially, you know, in like post 1990, when we have the postmodern ontological turn and we see a more diversification of approaches to archaeology that allow for, you know, a lot more voices were able to break that barrier into the field. And Plains, you just don't see that in Plains. So when you saw this data, what was running through your mind in terms of potential causes that were creating this statistical environment?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that overall in the field of archaeology, we've seen this trend, right, where women tend to publish less, they tend to apply for grant funding less, they get tenure track jobs less than men and so forth. And this is even more exacerbated for folks who don't identify as male or female. So I think that overall trend definitely contributes to it. But again, going back to what some of my colleagues at Plains Archaeology were telling me, this does seem to be, for reasons that I don't completely understand, a wider problem in Plains Archaeology that, at least, you know, without having that data to show, appears to be a little worse in Plains than some of the other regions I've worked in, at least.
Fair enough. And Erica, like, what were your initial reactions as a up and coming professional in the field about to have that degree in hand? You see this data. What is your initial reaction?
One of the initial reactions I had was I was very surprised that it didn't change at all, because at least in the school I was going to, Augustana University, and all of the professionals that I've met, I mostly met female professionals. I also met male professionals, but I saw a lot more female professionals than male professionals, which made the data really askew to me, because it just felt weird to see a different visual representation that you see in print.
And to follow up on that, if I can, an interesting thing that Erica and I looked at also was the rate of women versus men that were producing theses and dissertations, to see if the, you know, if that matched, if there just weren't as many women going to graduate school compared to men, and that perhaps that might have been the reason. So we looked at ProQuest to look at, you know, women versus men in the production of theses and dissertations over that same time period. And what we saw is that actually that data did not match. So there are significantly more, especially over the past decade, women producing theses and dissertations than men. And that does not match what we see in Plains anthropologists. And this is specifically theses and dissertations that focus on Plains archaeology specifically. And so either those people are not publishing their research in Plains anthropologists, which is a possibility, or they're just not publishing their research at all. And one thing that I've just thought of is, you know, one of my colleagues, Casey Carlson, who you both know, she had mentioned that there's also a disparity of graduate programs in Plains anthropology or Plains archaeology, and that perhaps because of that, and this, we didn't put this in the journal, but it's usually people who are working in academia who are doing most of the publishing, because our jobs depend on it, right? We're required to publish. And because there perhaps aren't as many programs that can support women archaeologists as academics, if that makes sense, then that publishing isn't happening at the same rate in Plains as in other regions. But that's just a colloquial idea that we've had.
Absolutely. And that's a good place to take our first break. We'll be right back with episode 43 after these messages. And we're back here with episode 43. And kind of bridging what we ended off with the last segment, like an own reflection as to what is the greater, like, academic, you know, university landscape of Great Plains archaeology. And I struggle to think of a single institution that's known as like a flagship Plains archaeologist. You know, it's usually one professor that happens to do work in the Great Plains. And even still, it, you know, here in Kansas, it's, you know, thinking about our state archaeologist, Nikki Klarman, or Crystal Dozier at Wichita State, Lauren Ritterbush at Kansas State, or Laura Murphy at Washburn. And like predominantly most of my colleagues are female who are women working here in Kansas in particular. But we also have Matt Howland down at Wichita State. But yeah, I really struggle to see that broader course of what's kind of happening at an academic level. But continuing that, that's one possible structure or disciplinary factor. Like, what are some other possible inequities or inequalities that could be contributing to the data that you guys are seeing? And what other journals are possibly seeing this?
There have been about 30 or so major studies of gendered publishing in archaeological journals. And again, they all kind of show that men are publishing more than women. But other than American Antiquity, which published slightly more men than women versus Plains, and again, the Journal of Great Basin and California Archaeology, Plains is really at the bottom of the pile there. And again, I'm not exactly sure what could be causing that. One idea that I've had since publishing this is that perhaps there's something about the environment of the plains that makes it more difficult for mothers, for example, to go out and do field work. That being said, I know plenty of archaeologists in the plains who have taken their children into the field with them, and their male colleagues have had no problem with this. And so I keep going back and forth, like maybe it's this, maybe it's that. But then I see, like you were saying, so many examples where women are doing the thing that I think might be the problem in the plains. And so I think, you know, we need to perhaps collect more direct data from women working in the plains in all career fields to see what's going on there.
You know, one thing that comes to mind in the academic space, but clearly has no bearing because you guys have shown it, the numbers are rarely changing past decade, is, oh, well, you know, now in academia, you want higher impact factors. So that might be driving it. But then your data shows like, no, the numbers are pretty constant. Like that can't be it. And so it's like, well, you know, just trying to think of the landscape, it, you know, maybe it's a theoretical approach. But even then, like Plains anthropologist is a four fields, I mean, heavily archaeological, let's not sugarcoat that, but it is a four fields journal in its inception that is supposed to not, it's supposed to take plus whatever, like there really doesn't seem like a huge, you know, theoretical bias in it. I mean, hell, as we're talking in the green room of like, how do we get more people to do it? Or like, are people being dissuaded from not writing in Plains? I mean, there's back issues of Plains. Like they're begging for people to publish in this journal, right? And so like there's an absolute need. So it really is just perplexing.
Yeah, I mean, when I went to the Plains conference this past fall and presented this kind of the initial run of the data there that Erica and I had collected, I got such positive feedback from so many people there, and they offered so many suggestions for how to, you know, make the paper better and how to improve the study. So it didn't seem like, at least the people that I was talking to were at all, you know, they were very supportive of having this kind of study done and having more women publishing in Plains anthropologists and having more women in the field. Again, I'm not talking to everybody in the field, but I did get, you know, I didn't have any negative feedback. And the reviewers, when they wrote reviews to Erica and I, were very positive as well and very encouraging. So at least in today's population of Plains archaeologists, it seems that people overall want to see this kind of positive change. And so again, I keep going back to, why isn't it happening?
I mean, what are your thoughts, Erica, as things that you have noticed as looking into your career in archaeology as well as your classmates? Have you heard, you know, maybe from classmates or even thought about yourself of like, well, why would I publish when Plains, where I could go publish to a more prestigious journal, or maybe something like Central Plains Archaeologists, like a smaller, more even further regional focused journal that might be, you know, less intimidating to submit an article to?
Yeah. What I can speak to for that is a lot of us never heard of journals. We didn't know there were regional journals. I personally didn't know there was even a Plains Anthropology until I got told, hey, there's this conference for Plains archaeologists. They have a journal as well, which does make sense in that aspect why people aren't adding their own articles or publishing because they don't know these articles and journals exist. Unless you're in the circle that knows they exist, you're not going to publish there. And at least for aspiring archaeologists, like my classmates and future archaeologists, they're also in training right now. One, we don't know the journals exist. But two, you just don't know how to get published. It's not something talked about. You can't find anything out there. I only knew this was going to be because Phyllis knew how to do publishing. Otherwise, I've only seen one of my classmates actually get published, and that was, ironically, a man that got help from another institution.
All right. That's good attention to bring and just being able to reflect off your own experience. So broader implications for the trends that you're seeing, you know, we can, you know, history of the discipline itself, right? Super male dominated from the beginning. It wasn't until really the 60s. I mean, like Cynthia Irwin was ahead of her time in like the 40s and 50s. But like it took a while for women to break into that space. Like they weren't allowed in. They had to force themselves in. And then, you know, we can talk about other groups of people after that. But what does, you know, how these inequalities in authorship, how do they influence whose perspectives become part of the scholarly record, right? Like archaeology gives that voice to the voiceless, you know, quoting David Hurst Thomas, right? Like, what does this mean?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, you know, in academia in general, if your research doesn't get published, then it's like it never happened, right? So if women and other, you know, non-male or non-white male archaeologists are not able to publish, then it's almost like they don't exist in the field, if that makes sense. And so by not having those voices represented in these academic journals, then we're ignoring the perspectives of a huge part of our field. And they're going to obviously bring very diverse perspectives to what we're doing. One example I can bring, Carlton, your current student, Michaela Williams, was my former student at Augustana. And she was my field assistant on the first field school that I taught at Augustana. And this isn't related to publishing, but I think it goes back to the point. While we were out there, she was identifying circles on the landscape, these like large, I still don't know what they are, large circles on the landscape at this farm that we were working at that I couldn't see. I couldn't see them, but she could see them. She could feel them. I should also mention that she's Indigenous. And so she had a different relationship to the landscape, obviously, than I as a white woman would have. And so we recorded the circles as she saw them, even though I really wasn't seeing them. And then when we looked at the magnetometer data, those circles were there. They were real, but I didn't see them. And I was never going to see them without her help. And so by having Michaela, an Indigenous woman in the field with me, I guess, let me rephrase, had she not been in the field with me, I would have missed one of the largest circles in that field and wouldn't have seen it. And then I wouldn't perhaps have believed what I was seeing on the magnetometry data either, if that makes sense, because we don't know what's going on in that field. And so again, just having diversity of experience, diversity of background, diversity of religion in the field and in academic publishing is really going to broaden our understanding of past populations in a way that we're not going to get if it's just a certain group of people doing that.
Absolutely. And also what your guys is the Excel sheet that you guys also provided. Sorry, if you can hear the cat, it is dinner o'clock for Laramie Bear. She makes appearances quite regularly on this podcast, her little voice snippets. But you also have collected data that other people can then add or edit to look at further trends, right? So like you put an incredible amount of work. That's something that becomes useful for other people to also identify publishing trends within other ways of looking at the data. So I mean, what advice do you guys have for how Plains can change this? How do we make it equitable? How do we get more women publishing as sole authors or as first authors in Plains Anthropologist?
You know, one thing I would recommend is doing, you know, reaching out directly to especially young women in the field. That was how I got my first article published. I had a more senior woman in the field who I had been a part of one of her sessions at the SAA, and she reached out to me directly and asked if I would want to be a part of a special issue based on that session. And just like Erica was talking about earlier, at the time, I had no idea how to publish. No reference point from where to start, how to even start writing a paper. And she was such a wonderful mentor and really walked me through step by step what this should look like, helped me with the edits, because when I got that first round of edits back, I was really discouraged. You know, if you've never seen, sometimes these edits are not edits, but reviews can be quite scathing, right? And if you're a young scholar who's never gotten that kind of really critical feedback before, it can be really intimidating. And I at first thought perhaps I wouldn't continue with the paper, but this senior mentor of mine was really great and explained that actually there were other people that were part of this special issue who were PhDs and senior academics who had also gotten very critical feedback, that it wasn't just my paper and that this was a normal part of the process, which really helped me to want to continue. And then once I got that first article out, you know, it was so much easier from there to have that confidence to go on my own and try and publish more. So I think, you know, reaching out directly to some of these women in the field, because as we've talked about, there are certainly a lot of women working in Plains archaeology that could benefit from a direct invite, perhaps.
Kind of to add to that, to Phyllis's point, I believe that there should be more access to how journals publish and what journals are available for articles to be submitted, because a lot of times you don't hear about them, or if you're not from that region or just starting out, you don't know they're there. So if that happens, there might be more publishers and there might be more women submitting, which will lead to possibly it being changed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think having that, from my recent recollection, it's when students present at either a poster or the paper, and the paper in particular, you know, one of those, I don't know if it's a reward, but the person that wins, they generally ask them like, oh, you should definitely submit this to the journal. They should be asking everybody. And that's just from my reflection when I was, you know, did that like, you know, like 6 or 7 years ago. So maybe they do that now, but yeah, encouraging, especially now with great in Plains Anthropologists, we've had a lot more younger, we have a lot more student engagement and pushing them to contribute. Absolutely. And something to call attention to. And hopefully people that listen to the podcast in this episode and understand how severe this is can inspire folks to submit original research to Plains Anthropologists. So before we close off, is there anything else either of you would like to say for the listeners, or maybe, you know, give encouragement to folks in the society?
Yeah, I would just say that, again, Bill Billick and Marcel Kornfield, who is the current editor, have been very helpful and very encouraging. And if you're interested at all in publishing in Plains, please reach out to Marcel or Bill, and I'm sure that they will be as kind to you as they were to Erica and I. As Carlton pointed out, they want people publishing in the journal. There's a lot of room for new publications. I'm also happy to help if anyone has questions about what it was like for me publishing in the journal. I'm happy to answer any of those questions. But yeah, just reach out, and I, you know, they have no problem, at least with me, answering your questions and letting you know if your idea is something that would be appropriate for the journal. And as far as I've, you know, the feedback I've gotten is that they are very excited to have young women, not just young, but women authors publishing.
I would say about the same. Just don't be scared to try to submit or see if they even want your research. Because a lot of times you think, oh, it's just for school or it's just for a research project of mine. But sometimes that data, even though it might not be major findings, it's still important to have other people see it. And if you get published, that's just another step forward.
Well, and this article is a big highlight of that. Like, Erica, when I read this article, I did not know you're finishing your undergrad. Like, this was a really great article that you contributed to. And hopefully with your experience with this, you can push your colleagues and coworkers like, hey, you know, just if you know, if you don't feel comfortable enough yourself to be the first author, find a mentor and get it done. So it's always that first robot. This was awesome to have you guys on. Thank you so much for sharing with me and with the audience this article and bringing attention to this issue. So thank you guys both very much. This has been incredible. And with that, we will see you guys next time. Thank you for listening to the Great Plains Archaeology Podcast. You can follow me on Instagram at Pawnee_archaeologist. And you can also email me at greatplainsarcpodcast@gmail.com. And remember, anybody can love the mountains, but it takes a soul to love the prairie. American author Willa Cather.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. The Archaeology Podcast Network's chief editor is Rachel Roden. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media and newsletter coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. The APN was founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle on December 1st, 2014. We're supported by our amazing podcast hosts, many volunteers, and listeners like you. Check out membership at www.archpodnet.com/members.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.